Welcome to A World of Good podcast. I'm Nate Tapman.
And I'm Andrew Gale.
And we are two friends
who love Jesus,
care about the church,
and travel the world to share stories of people who do the same.
Our conversations happen in all kinds of places,
like a coffee shop in an airport terminal,
or even the back of a crowded taxi.
But no matter where we go, from Argentina to Zimbabwe,
we capture stories of the good God is doing around the world.
And we hope those stories will do you a world of good. Welcome to A World of Good podcast. I am Andrew Gale here with my co-host Nate Tapman. Nate, tell us where you are today.
We have been stuck at home for so long in both in season one and again here in season two, or at the start of season two. And finally, I have the opportunity to record on the road.
On location.
I am on location and currently in Jacksonville, Florida. So as many of our listeners hopefully know by now, I am in the middle of a transition. Our family's moving to Spain. And so I am officially done at County Line Church. And we came down to Florida to two things. One, visit with Stacy's family. She has a brother who lives down here. And then two, we are doing some fundraising. So we are on the road and we have had, we've enjoyed some great weather down here. And I'm currently sitting in our rental minivan.
Of course you are.
While the rest of my family is inside enjoying a cup of coffee. So, well, they're probably, I would be enjoying a cup of coffee. They're probably doing some smoothie fruity coffee drinks.
Well, it's not as glamorous as some of the locations maybe you're hoping to travel to. But Jacksonville, it's different than Indiana. That's positive.
It is. It is. It's different and it's warmer. So yes,
go.
It's not international. It's not global, but it is not Indiana either. So that's a good thing.
So Nate, if people want to connect with us, you know, especially when you are out and about traveling, how can they connect in, ask questions, and learn more about the podcast?
There are several ways to follow us on social media. You can follow us on Twitter at A World of Good Pod. You can also follow us on Instagram. Just search for A World of Good Podcast. We also post updates to the Global Strategy Facebook page, and we have a website where you can learn more information about the podcast. And on that website, you can sign up to receive every new episode directly into your email inbox. And that is at
www.chogglobal.org/aworldofgood.
Well, Andrew, as we shared last time, we've got a couple of new segments that we have introduced. And so we are going to start off with Coffee Talk.
Now for Coffee Talk.
Well, Nate, coffee, as you know, is a global phenomenon. You know, it's not popular everywhere in the world, but it's popular in so many places. And like any great superhero, coffee has a pretty iconic origin story. So I thought for this segment of Coffee Talk, we would give a little bit of coffee's origin story. It's important to note that the exact history of coffee is really unknown. There are stories that people have floated about how they think it happened, but none of it's really been verified. One of the main stories that is most commonly expressed when we talk about the history of coffee and how we created this delicious cup that we now drink, started about somewhere between 850 and 1100 AD. It happened in the Kaffa region of Ethiopia, and there was this goat herder who noticed that his goats got super energized after eating this red berry. So he was wondering why his goats were getting energized after eating the red berry. So the goat herder ate one himself and noticed that he gained energy. So he took those berries. This is where the story begins to break down. One story I heard says he took those berries to a nearby monk. Basically, the beans were considered bad, so they were thrown into a fire. The aroma that came from those beans, though, was so incredible that the goat herder, or the monk, whoever we think threw them into the fire, ground that coffee up, poured it over hot water, making the first cup of coffee. Now, there's another origin story that connects coffee to the region of Mocha in ancient Yemen and to a man that was banished from his village but survived on the berries of the coffee. He roasted them to make them a little less bitter. That's another story. In reality, the truth is that both of these stories are probably true. The most common coffee plant is native to Ethiopia, so many hold to that story, that Ethiopia is kind of the birthplace of coffee. But the first actual evidence, written evidence of roasting and brewing coffee is from Yemen. It was written about by an imam who is known to have exported goods from Ethiopia to Yemen. So it's very possible that the origin of the coffee plant may be from Ethiopia, but the actual process of brewing coffee may be from the region, from Yemen and from the region of Mocha. So interesting history, but it's all kind of from Africa, the Middle East, North Africa and the Middle East is where we get our coffee tradition.
That is really, really interesting. And with that story, since it's kind of that, looking at that area as the origins of coffee, what is your, Andrew, what is your favorite coffee in Africa from African continent?
That's a great question. Yeah, today I'm actually drinking a Rwandan coffee.
Okay.
So it's something I roasted over the weekend and it's delicious, but I tend to really like Ethiopian coffees. I think you go back to the original source. I drink them like regular coffee, although there is an Ethiopian coffee ceremony that's a whole experience in and of itself. But drinking just Ethiopian dry processed beans, I think, are phenomenal. They have great flavor. What's your favorite African blend or African coffee?
Yeah, I would say mine is probably from Kenya. I think the Kenyan flavor, it's not a dark, it's more of a lighter. And again, it depends on where from Kenya you get it and how it's roasted, but it's kind of I would say it's more of a medium type of coffee bean. And I love Ethiopian coffee as well. I believe we have that at home. And I also love Rwandan coffee too. So
Africa's a great place. There's great coffees in Africa. They tend to do the dry processing, which is one of my favorite ways to process the beans. I think it gives it a great, great flavor.
Yeah. And I was just going to say the same thing. Africa produces great, great coffee.
The reason I chose this origin story is that it happens in Ethiopia, which is on the northern side of Africa. And, you know, the story that we had last week with Corey and Abby, and then this week we're going to be kind of in the Botswanan church, is on the opposite end of Africa. So I thought, why don't we start with a story about Africa, since we're going to be talking again about Africa today in this episode.
Look at you.
I know. Great connections, right? But before we jump there, Nate, there's a lot that's been happening in the news as of late. So what do you have to share with us about what's going on in the world?
So yeah, today's in the news story actually comes from Beirut, Lebanon. As most of you have probably heard by now, on August 4th, there was an explosion that devastated the city of Beirut. And while the fire, the source of the fire is still kind of under investigation, it's not known yet, at least at the time of this recording, we do know of what it was that caused the explosion. And I did some investigation on this, and it was just very, very intriguing as to why or how this came about. But it actually goes back to 2013. There was a Russian-owned ship carrying 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate.
Wow. That's
and
crazy.
For whatever reason, this ship arrived in Beirut on its way to Mozambique. And it's not really clear as to why it docked and why it could not leave. But once it did dock there, it was impounded in 2014. And again, the reasons are not clear as to why the ship was not allowed to leave. Some reports saying that there was mechanical failure, and there were other reports that it was something else. But eventually, the owner of the ship, the Russian who owned the ship, he abandoned not only his ship, but he abandoned his crew as well, which, by the way, the crew was not allowed to leave the ship for a year. It took 12 months before they were even allowed to leave the ship because all of this was under investigation. I'm also assuming immigration laws and different things like that as to, you know, why they couldn't leave the ship. But for over the last 6 years, there's been an ongoing battle between the port authorities and the Lebanese government over what should be done with this vessel. And so it was sitting there, over 2,700 pounds of ammonium nitrate. And as early as 6 months ago, there were actually inspectors who warned that this ship was a ticking time bomb and it would eventually blow up the city of Beirut. And in fact, currently there are some port authorities who are under house arrest as an investigation is underway. So it's just mind-boggling that this has been going on for the last 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
As of this recording, we do know that you know, unfortunately, there are 171 people dead, over 6,000 injured. And, you know, to continue in the devastation and continue the bad news, that there were three hospitals that were destroyed in the city of Beirut. There are three others who are only able to be at partial capacity, which again is obviously worrisome as Beirut and other countries continue to deal with the coronavirus.
I think when we hear these statistics, it's hard to grasp, you know, without really knowing people on the ground. I've had the opportunity to be in conversation with Reverend Joy Malou, who's the national leader for the Church of God in Lebanon. And he shared that there are four churches that were damaged, some of them significantly damaged. No church members were killed, but some were injured. I asked him just to share some of his experience, and he sent some really powerful information about just what he experienced as a part of this. But I want to read just one paragraph that he wrote. It's a testament to the Lebanese people and to their perseverance in the midst of adversity. And so Reverend Joy Malou writes, quote, "Why stay in Lebanon? That's a popular question that we have raised in the past 20 years, and we were often asked, why not leave? Who would stay a witness to God's love and saving plan in our place in Lebanon? Who can give hope to the people of Lebanon other than the believers who trust Jesus Christ as Lord? That's why we are determined to stay here and follow God's calling on our lives." A really powerful statement of a desire to remain involved and connected and supporting the church on the ground, even in the midst of terrible tragedy. And I know you've been in contact with some of your friends in Lebanon. Share with us some of what you've heard.
Yeah, and I've got a friend named Issa, and I first met Issa a few years ago at the Three Worlds Leadership Network. And along with myself and other Three Worlds team members, we've been in contact and conversation with Issa. And so we asked him to give us a firsthand account of his experience and some things that, again, we can be praying for. So here is Issa's firsthand account.
Yeah, so when the explosion happened, I was driving towards downtown Beirut. I was driving to a place called Aswak Beirut, which happens to be like one street above where the explosion happened, literally one street above. I did not think of this detail until you asked me for this recording today. So I thank God because I wasn't there. If I was there, I think it would have been fatal, maybe. I don't know, considering how many people have been affected and they were actually miles away. This would have been like a few hundred meters away. I thank God that I wasn't there. I was driving home in my car, and I was like 4 kilometers away from the blast location. I think everybody in Lebanon thought that the explosion happened right next to them. One of the TV stations was I think broadcasting live from the Prime Minister house, and as soon as the explosion ex-Prime Minister's house and as soon as the explosion happens, he said that the Prime Minister is under attack. So when I was driving, there was this very loud, extremely loud noise, and very deep. I could feel the pressure on my ears and on my body, and then there was like extreme silence. Everybody on the roads was completely shocked, and they were trying to see where the source of the noise was. I thought the explosion happened in the school that I was driving next to. I thought maybe like there was a fuel tank that exploded underground or something, because I could see the doors also, they were bumped in, like they were broken. Then I looked up as I was driving, and I could see this very, very, very high cloud of smoke, and it was like pinkish, and it just looked very weird. And then I realized that this is something catastrophic that has happened, that took place. And I realized that it wasn't next to me, it was actually far. But considering how high the smoke was, I knew this was not a normal explosion. It was something out of the ordinary. So I just did a U-turn and I started calling my friends and checking on them, trying to get in touch with them, because we left the office at the same time. So as soon as I got home and I made sure that everybody was okay, my family, we started to check on each other. Everybody was calling everybody. We started to, you know, watch the news, and just we were in shock as we started to discover how bigger than expected this was. So I think everybody was impacted by the blast. This year has been a very, very tough year on Lebanon, starting with the economic crash and the, you know, the decline and the, you know, crash of the currency, the Lebanese currency, and then COVID-19, the lockdown, everybody having to stay at home, and now this explosion. I think everybody has been accumulating a lot of stress and pressure inside, and I think this was like the event that made everything just worse, because there was a lot of unnecessary death and a lot of bad news. People were barely making it, and now they are having to suffer also material losses of their houses, of their businesses, of people they loved. It's just sad. Everywhere you look, it's just sad, and you can see it on people's faces. You can see it on their morale. You can see it in how they are, you know, expressing themselves. I think this is a very bad time for Lebanese people. One thing I could thank the Lord for is that I think he protected everybody I know personally, within my church, within my family, within my work. I haven't heard of any person that was really injured physically. I think I've had some, you know, glass broken at my house. My brother has had some glass broken at his house, but all these are fixable. Some of my friends who were close to the blast area also suffered like material, like house damages and stuff like that, but none of them are physically injured. So I thank God, because we've been hearing a lot of bad stories about people who are missing, people who just have glass in their eyes, people who have glass in their bodies, people who are suffering from, you know, skull injuries, you know, internal bleeding and stuff like that. I thank God, because I feel God protected his children. He's shown us his mercy and his love for us. One thing you can pray for Beirut is people are really, really, really in a bad place right now. They have been accumulating a lot of pressure inside this last year. So I think the Lebanese people in general, I mean, I have God's hope in my life, and I feel I am under a lot of stress and pressure. So I'm not sure about the other people. I mean, people who don't have Christ in their lives, I'm not sure how they are going to deal with all this stress and this pressure. I think one thing you can pray for the church is to not lose hope, and to keep their eyes on Christ and on our hope in Christ, so that we are able to be light to our people around us. This is what I think our role now should be, to be light to people around us, and doesn't only have to be in giving them things or providing materials for them or needs. It also has to be in providing hope, and by showing our love for them and our hope in Christ also. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Isa, so much for sharing your account of firsthand what happened in Beirut. And to all the listeners out there, please join us in praying for Isa, praying for his family, praying for the Church of God and the people in Beirut during this time.
Yeah, we're thankful that Isa was able to share that with us. Well, today we have a kind of different episode. You know, it's funny, I feel like we say that every other episode. We have kind of a different episode as if any of these have been normal. But rather than just having one interview, we've actually done a few different interviews. And these interviews were done back in November when I was visiting with Corey and Abby Stocksdale and Tim and Joy Coppice and the leaders of the Church of God in Botswana. And so these interviews are with some of the church leadership. We get to hear from Bishop Keem, who is the bishop of the Church of God in Botswana. Then we're going to kind of jump from there to an interview with Pastor Curtis Molapisi, who's one of the leaders and pastors of the church in Botswana. And then finally, we move to an opportunity for you to kind of walk alongside me as I go and visit a church on a Sunday. So you'll get to hear some singing, and there's an ordination service that happens, and a baptism that happens. And so hopefully you'll have an opportunity just to kind of experience a little bit of what life is like for the church in Botswana. So for this first interview, I'm sitting with the bishop of Botswana. The interview was conducted outside under a tree. So it's very common in Botswana when you go and visit someone, they sit outside. There's usually a place where you sit outside together under a tree or on a patio. It's very uncommon to be invited into someone's home. There's just kind of a location outside that you sit and have conversation. So we sat under a tree with our recorders. There's a picture that will be posted, I'm sure, that you can see of me and Bishop sitting, drinking some juice, eating some cookies, and just talking about life and ministry. The bishop shares his story, and he shared his call to Christ and how God is at work even when we don't know it. And so now, let's listen to this interview with the Bishop of Botswana. And how many churches are there in the Church of God in Botswana?
Church of God, we have got Sihitwa, we have got Shakawe, we have got Shorowe, we have got Busija, and Gumare. We don't have a pastor yet in Gumare, but the building is there. We don't have people there. I think we have to make a crusade. And then Ahang will be there.
Okay.
Because he has gone to Gumare.
Yeah. So one of the pastor's names is Ahan. And you were telling me that story. I think that's a really important story. You talked about how Ahan, he has a job outside of the church, and his job kind of took him to Gumare. Is that right? Is that kind of how that... Tell me some of that story of how he got called to that church.
Yeah, he himself, he felt he wanted to pastor at Sihitwa. And then after a time, he failed, I think, to go to Sihitwa because of children, because he's got children. So he wanted now to leave Sihitwa and then come back in Mao. But he didn't come back forever. He's still going there checking Sihitwa. While he was here, he got transfer to go to Gumare. At Gumare, I think we have got a church. Wow. So he transferred. He didn't want to go to Gumare. But
his job's making him go.
But the job says he should go. Yeah. So myself, I think I was pleased because I found that God was doing something. Because he was in Sihitwa, he failed to pastor Sihitwa, so when he came back, so now God is sending him to another place, yeah, where Church of God is still there.
That's wonderful.
So I think God works in the way that is you can't know. But when God works, he works. I'm pleased with that. The other one, again, is we have got a branch in Shakawe. So we had no pastor there. We have got one pastor in Musija, who's called Molapisi. So he has also got a transfer to go to Shakawe.
So Pastor Molapisi was at a different church in Bosaja.
Yeah, in Bosaja here.
And he was got a, another work transfer. That's
so
gonna
he's
take
got
him.
A transfer to Shakawe. So I'm also pleased that all these two churches, they had no pastors.
Yeah.
Now God explained that the pastors should go there. So we've got pastors now there.
Wow. Well, Bishop, yeah, absolutely. Well, Bishop, I just appreciate you sharing that story. I think that's such an encouraging story for us because sometimes we don't know what God's doing. And,
yes,
you know,
yes.
We have these opportunities like these churches that need pastors,
yeah, yeah.
And we don't know how God's going to fill that.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we trust and when we listen, you know, yeah. There are opportunities that come about. I mean, you couldn't have guessed that the transfer would be to that specific city, to either of those two specific cities
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where you have churches. And so they could
yeah.
have been transferred to any city, but
yeah.
but God has a plan. And we're just thankful that yeah, you were able to share that story with us today.
I think God's plan is powerful. No one knows it. Only God knows. I didn't know that Church of God in Shakawe will have a pastor, or Church of God in Sihitwa will have a pastor, or in Gumare. But through the power of God, we are now having pastors there. So that's very good.
I think that's exactly it. I think sometimes we think about the plan of God,
yeah,
and we
yeah.
think that means that we're not to do anything. We just let God do it all.
Yeah.
But the reality is we're to be doing something. We just trust that God is working as well. And so you were doing something. You were raising up leaders, trusting
yeah, yeah,
that God
yeah.
would make a way for those leaders
yeah, yeah,
to lead.
Yeah,
and it's yeah. just so cool to see that that's happened.
Yeah, yeah. That's very good.
Well, thank you so much for sharing
that's
this story
good.
With us. The next interview is with one of the leaders there, Pastor Curtis Molapisi. Him and his wife just welcomed their first child into the world a few months ago, so we're so excited
oh, wow.
for them. Yeah.
Congratulations.
During his interview, he talks about the All Africa Assembly, which was planned for October of 2020, but has been, as everything in our world, has been postponed until a later date, pending all of the coronavirus COVID-19 issues.
Can I boo that?
Yes.
Can I boo that?
We can, there can be a collective boo. We can all, as a collective global unit, boo COVID-19. So,
no kidding.
Yeah. Sad about that, but really love what Pastor Curtis shares about the church and how they're reaching out to their community. So I am sitting here with Curtis Molapisi. Did I say your name right? Okay. With they would say Maruti. Curtis Molapisi, Maruti meaning pastor, so Pastor Curtis from Botswana. And I just wanted to invite him to share a few things about the church in Botswana and what's happening. We love telling stories of just good things that God is doing around the world. And so I invited Curtis to share some with us. So before we jump into that, Pastor Curtis, what can you tell us about the country of Botswana? Give us a picture of what it's like. How many people, for instance, how many people live in Botswana?
The current population stands about 2.3 million people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we're in Maun, which is a city in the northwest part.
Yeah, the northwest part of the country, northwest district. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the capital is where?
The capital city is Gaborone. Down okay. south of the country.
Okay, close
yeah.
to South
close
Africa.
Close to South Africa, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what's like something, if somebody didn't know much about Botswana, now we know that it's close to South Africa, we know kind of the population, what is Botswana known for?
Botswana is well known for its diamond industry.
Okay.
We are heavily dependent on diamonds.
Okay.
That's the major thing we export to different countries. We also export beef.
Okay.
Yeah, we export beef to Europe and surrounding countries in Africa.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you were just sharing about when Botswana got its independence and when they found diamonds in Botswana.
Yeah.
Tell me about a little bit about what you were just sharing. I thought that's really, really interesting.
Yeah. Well, we got our independence in 1966.
Okay.
From the UK. Yeah.
Okay.
From Britain. Yeah. And we got our independence in 1966. And my understanding is that we discovered our diamonds immediately after the British left. So
that's a very lucky timing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah. And then requested mineral rights for all of their diamonds so that the money that came from that was able to stay in the country.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. That's really cool. You know, another thing that I've learned, I was having a conversation with Dr. Lacau this morning, and she mentioned that when I asked her what's something that's interesting about the Botswanan people, she said that they're a peaceful people, and that they're known for being peaceful. And that was really interesting to me. I didn't know that that's part of the history.
That's very true.
Yeah.
That's true. Considering that we have different kinds, different tribes, more than 12, actually, and we get along very well.
Yeah.
Having people coming into this country from different countries, there's never any, you know, conflicts or arguments or anything that causes, you know, tension between us. We're just a welcoming, loving, peaceful country.
I just find that really interesting. That's really cool and something I think we can learn from. Well, tell us about the Church of God in Botswana. How many churches are there? Where are they located? And just give us a picture of what the church looks like here in the Church of God Mission. It's called Church of God Mission, right?
Yeah, it is.
What
it
Church
is.
Of God Mission is looks like here in Botswana.
All right. We have two churches here in Maun, and I happen to be a pastor of one of those.
Yep.
we also have one located in Shorobe. That's about 40 kilometers from Maun.
Okay.
We have another one in Sihitwa. That's about 100 kilometers from here. We also have another one in Shakawe that's about 400 kilometers from here.
Okay.
So we have about a total of 5 churches altogether. And this is just only in the northwest district of the country.
Okay, yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's really cool. Mm. And as you guys think about as a church, what you want to do, you know, what your goals are, what your visions are, what are some things that come to mind as you think about where you hope the church will be in 10 years from now?
Well, one of the main things has always been to expand as a church, to grow as a church, to have more churches, you know, planted in the country. And right now we are still struggling with having the current churches, you know, to be able to stand on their own, to be independent, to be strong. And this is one thing that we are really working on to ensure that these churches have full-time pastors. They have people that can, you know, take care of the church. We're also looking into having a more community-focused church, rather than just having to, you know, come to church on Sunday and then we sing and dance and praise and then go back home. So we are looking into being more involved into community, and we are hoping to get more projects that will, you know, foster into the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very cool. That's very cool. You know, one of the things that's been happening recently with the church in Africa is the All Africa Assembly. How is that creating some connection between, for those that don't know, can you maybe just tell a little bit about that and what's happening with that? Would that be something you could share?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It all started, I think that's about maybe four or five years ago. And thanks to Mike and Heather Webb for the connections that they started all together. This is basically about African countries, Church of God in different African countries that have been in these countries, but not knowing that we have, you know, brothers and sisters out there. We've been thinking we're just isolated and all alone in this country, but we have recently discovered and get to know that there are other churches in different countries. So through these connections, we've been able to know that, you know, just in our neighboring country, Zambia, we have Church of God there, in Zimbabwe, in South Africa, and we've been to Tanzania, Rwanda, and other countries in Africa, and it's been fun, it's been wonderful.
That's very
and
cool.
And right now we are working on having All Africa Conference that we are praying and hoping that everything works fine, and we're going to be having that in 2020 next year. Yeah,
in Durban, South
Africa. In Durban, South Africa.
Yeah,
yes.
we're really excited about that and the opportunity for those African countries to connect again and kind of the first really formalized. I mean, they've done some of these informal meetings, and you were at the meeting in Rwanda, as well as the one in Tanzania.
Rwanda, Tanzania, yes.
Now Durban will be the first kind of big culmination of that.
Yes.
How can the church in the United States be praying for the church in Botswana? As the church in the United States hears some of the things that are going on, what you're doing, how can we be lifting you up in prayer?
Thank you. I think, one of the main issues would be for the church, for the breakthrough of the church. We're talking about breakthrough in terms of being able to be self-sustaining financially, so to speak. We also want support in terms of prayer. Of course, you guys to be praying for us to be able to have leaders, pastors, you know, who are willing to serve the Lord regardless of the cost. It costs something to serve God, and we just want you to, you know, pray for us in terms of having people who can be willing to serve the Lord and be pastors, especially to take care of this church that I mentioned earlier on.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. Thank you for your commitment to the church. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to get to see the church and what they're doing. And you mentioned singing and dancing. Dancing is a big part of the church in Botswana. It was a lot of fun to be there. I don't know that I have yet gained the skills enough to join in the dancing, but I'm going to try to, by the end of my time here, have a little bit more rhythm than I currently do. So thank you so much for welcoming us. And thanks for sharing a little bit about the Church of God in Botswana.
You're welcome.
So far, we've been able to hear from the bishop and from Pastor Curtis Molapisi about the work of the church in Botswana. And now I want to share just a little about my experience on Sunday morning. I was able to be a part of a church service there in Botswana, and it was at one specific location. But churches from around that region all came together because it was a very special service. A few different things were happening that morning. So first, there was going to be the ordination service for Joy Coppice and Abby Stocksdale. They finished ordination in the United States, and so they had an opportunity to be ordained and recognized by the church in Botswana as well. And then afterwards, they had a baptismal. And so I got to be part of both of those experiences and just want to give you a very quick glimpse at what that experience was like. So first, I want to start in the actual church service. As I said, this was a connection of a lot of churches from around the region. And so one of the things they did, besides having very lively, joyful worship, was that they did a roll call. And so here you can hear the roll call of the different churches as they welcomed each church community to the location of church that morning. Next, we had a moment for the ordination service. It was a really incredible experience to get to recognize Joy Coppice and Abby Stocksdale, and not just recognizing God's call on their life, but the call of that church in Botswana to lift them up as pastors. And so in this next little section, you can hear the bishop in Botswana share that Joy and Abby will no longer be known as just Miss Joy and Miss Abby, but they will now be known as pastors. And so just listen to him as he expresses that to the church.
I just want to tell you that from now onwards, we are no longer going to call them Mastok Day or Makwapes. From now onwards, they are pastors in Church of God Mission. Are we clear?
Lastly, after service was over, it was a beautiful experience together. We went outside just right around the corner in this very hot, dusty day. The sun was oppressive. It was very, very hot. But a cool moment for us to be together to experience baptism. So in this moment, we got to see a number of people get baptized. The baptism was just right around the corner outside. Tim Coppice was able to participate and be a part of that. But as you can hear in this music, they are singing songs as each person comes down and is baptized. In all of this, I hope you just hear the incredible joy. Imagine what a baptismal service would be like. Imagine what a commissioning ordination service would be like. This was a really unique and beautiful experience, and I was so grateful that I got to be a part of it. Oh. Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.